following program is brought to you by your friends at TheForce.net.
Oh, Maxi bit the Force.
And RebelScum.com.
You Rebel Scum.
The galaxy is listening.
Who needs that? No. Alawa. Who needs that?
Welcome to the Forcecast, your weekly dose of Star Wars news and much more.
This station is now the ultimate power in the universe. I suggest we use it.
All systems have been alerted to your presence, sir.
Check it out, Corporal.
Roger, roger.
Now, your hosts of the Forcecast, Jason and Pete.
We would be honored if you would join us.
And welcome to the Forcecast, your weekly dose of Star Wars. And we are the official podcast of TheForce.net and RebelScum.com. Happy and proud to be so. Joining you this week, this week's episode for November 16th, 2007. A very special episode of The Forcecast. As we told you all last week, after taking a week off a couple weeks ago, we come back, we have another show. And
a long show.
A very long show. Well, we had 2 weeks worth of news.
That's right.
You know, Lucasfilm wouldn't stop dropping all that news on us. We could get something done around here. But at any rate, we wanted to, like we said last week, we're not doing a regular episode of The Forcecast this week. We have something much, much, much better. We have with us two very special guests. They're the authors of, well, they need no introduction, really. But we'll treat it like it's like one of those normal talk shows, not like a Star Wars talk show. We'll act like we've never heard of these people before, but we do have the authors of the Star Wars Vault and, well, the grand poobah of Star Wars fandom, Steve Sansweet and Pete Vilmer. Pete, who we've been trying to get on the show for some time, and he just kept shutting us down every time we'd ask him. Don't have time for this.
I'm not going to put that out there on him. If we're going to go out as you know, fans of or you know, members of the non-Star Wars media, does that mean that I have to ask, so are there going to be more Star Wars movies?
I think I have to hang up now. But it's been nice talking to you guys.
Well, you are hearing the voice of Steve Sansweet. We want to say real quick thank you to our sponsor, Official Picks, your source for the official Star Wars autographs and photographs. You don't need to worry about fakes when you order from Official Picks. That's officialpicks.com, picks with an X. And right now, they've got a couple of new photographs that they're offering, a couple of ones that have been requested, one being the based on this famous Style D circus poster autographed by Countem, Carrie Fisher, Mark Hamill, Peter Mayhew, David Prowse, and Kenny Baker. That's available. Also, what's been called as the Rolling Stone cover, autographed by Peter Mayhew, Mark Hamill, and Carrie Fisher. Steve, now, is that the official title of that particular photograph, the Rolling Stone cover?
Beats me. I didn't know that they were selling that. I'm going to have to talk to Official Picks about that.
Oh,
I think that was
Brian Hoffman or something.
Yeah, obviously Rolling Stone has had lots of Star Wars covers over the years, but I can imagine that this is probably the one of Carrie Fisher in her famous bikini.
Well, actually, no. This is from A New Hope, and it's
really?
It's a shot with Chewie. He's got one arm around Han, and Han's in his pointing.
Okay,
the,
so this is the classic one, the very first one that we also have reproduced in the vault.
That's correct. Right. Yes, that's right.
So the vault's got Chewbacca actually holding Carrie Fisher up. Is that correct?
We have the Rolling Stone cover in the vault.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Well, since you guys are here, we want to maybe you can help us wish a happy birthday to a few of our listeners here. We've got William celebrating a birthday on November 15th, Kramer celebrating a birthday also on November 15th, and our good buddy Derek with November 17th. So happy birthday.
Happy birthday, guys.
Happy birthday, guys.
And we wanted to remind you once again that coming up this weekend in Chicago, our own Jimmy Mack will be making an appearance at the, what's the name of this show?
Oh, the Chicago Toy and Game Fair.
Thank you very much. It'll also be the final appearance on the Whirlwind tour of the folks behind The Force Among Us, Chris and Courtney Macht. So after a long, long publicity tour, they're going to be hanging it up. So make sure you're there. That's this weekend, November 17th. And 18th, is that right? My show notes are terrible this week. Terrible.
All
Jimmy posted this. Put the date on there, Jimmy. Anyway, it's Jimmy's kind of first official appearance, so Make sure you're out there and give Jimmy some support and some love. We wanted to have the Billy D quote of the week, but unfortunately we had an email glitch, and we didn't get the quote, so we'll have to leave you waiting. We'll be back the week after Thanksgiving. Yeah, so we'll
you know that we're not going to give up on the Billy D clip of the week. That's an important part of the show.
No, it's a hit.
So, yeah, don't think just because we're not doing it this week, we're giving it up. We're definitely going to be back after Thanksgiving with that. So
let's get to what brought you all here and what brought our illustrious guests here again, Steve Sansweet. And I want to get – the last time we had Steve on the program, I butchered his title. So I've got it written down now. Director of Content Management and Head of Fan Relations. I like to call him –
very good. Very good. Thank
can
you.
I just call you the Grand Poobah? That's kind
of – oh, that's fine. Whatever you want to call my answer to anything.
And Pete Vilmer, Senior Editor of Lucas Online. And Pete has endeared himself to the ForceCast because – he was the guy that put lowly old Pete and I, Pete Nadel, on the Lucasfilm Christmas card list. And I have
That's
to tell
right.
you, of everything that...
Pete, how could you make a mistake like that? I couldn't help it. It was on my B list, and I got the suit. Oh, okay. You got that far down, huh?
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, after all the when all was said and done last Christmas, it was like... That was the moment. That was the moment, getting that Christmas card. So have an opportunity to officially say thank you, Pete. That was very, very cool.
You're very welcome.
So, guys, let's...
And look forward to another one this year.
Oh, all right. Awesome. Very cool.
Maybe. Let's see how the program goes.
I was going to say, do we make it to the A-list this time, or are we still behind, like, some of the actors' pets?
You're somewhere between A and B. You're hovering higher, though.
Yeah, well, hey, we'll take it.
All right, guys, we want to obviously talk about the Star Wars Vault. This is an amazing book, and especially over the last couple of years when we've seen so many amazing big books like this, from Dressing a Galaxy to The Art of Ralph McQuarrie. But this thing is truly, truly special, and most of the folks that are listening to this program, whether live or via recorded podcast, are familiar enough with it. But for those of you who are not, it is, I have to say, it's probably the most creative way of telling the Star Wars saga, and I don't mean the story of the films per se, but behind the scenes. It's just so creative. It goes all the way from episode 4, 5, 6, up to 1, 2, and 3, covers it all. And what's so great about it is every other page not only has a photo, there's not just photos of these artifacts, but reproductions of some of these things. I mean, some of my favorites right off the bat, I have to say, are George Lucas's his Empire treatment. So it's actually you get the feel of what the notebook paper looks like. a manuscript from John Williams of part of the episode 4 score. Very cool. This telegram from Alec Guinness inviting the cast and crew to a party. Just things that you never knew existed, and now you cannot live without. And the emails that we've been getting on the program are just raving about this book. So it's very, very cool. So I want to ask, guys, first of all. What was the genesis of this project? How did this start? Whose idea was it?
Well, you know, I did a Star Wars scrapbook about 10 years ago, and it was a very cool book for its time, and that was my original concept, and the idea was to do a lot of things that were actually facsimiles and reproductions, and I thought we had done a pretty good job on it, but when I went back and checked, there were really only... 6 items that were actually reproduced as replicas, and everything else was, like, you know, printed on the page, beautifully photographed. And as I said, it was a cool book for its time, but it was also, you know, before the modern era of Star Wars. And I've been thinking, well, it'd be really neat to do a follow-up book, and I've been thinking about that since episode 1, really. But we really got serious about it as the 30th anniversary approached, and decided to do some sort of book that would be both a combination of the scrapbook, but also a book that would tell the whole story of the making, the marketing, the merchandising, the music, the fans, you know, you name it, the whole story of Star Wars in nice bite-sized chunks and some great photos, many of which had never been shown before. And also actual replicas, of which we have about 50. And then we added to that the first one CD and then 2 CDs. Right. And I think that we really lucked out because there were a choice of several different ways to go as far as publisher, and we ended up going with a book packager up in the Seattle area named Becker and Mayer, who has done a bunch of similar kinds of books, and so they have a lot of expertise rather than your normal publisher in doing a book like this. And it was a great experience for us to work with them, and a wonderful designer and a great editor. And the whole idea was, yes, let's appeal to the Star Wars fans, but let's, I mean, hardcore fans, but let's also go beyond that and tell the story of Star Wars so it's accessible for just about everybody.
Well, Steve, when you were plotting, and Pete too, please interject, as you were planning and plotting the book, was it a matter of giving yourself some guidelines as to what you were looking for, or was it just you found a piece and then you decided to write about it, or was it kind of like what came first, the chicken or the egg, the piece that you wanted to add to it, or the where it fit into the overall story of the book?
Well, I think I seem to recall us brainstorming over what type of subjects do we want to tackle in this thing. And we threw out, must have been at least a couple dozen, maybe even three dozen ideas on sections of the history that we definitely wanted to be included in the book. And then once we hammered those out, we went in and started selecting pieces that we felt would represent that part of the history effectively or well, or, in a humorous or fun way,
I mean, that was a key session that Pete and I had, and I was sort of blocked, and there were all kinds of ways that this book could go, and I was worried about how it would be organized. Should it be by subject? Should it be by time? Should it be by movie? And then, okay, what items do we include? Of course, it turned out to be what items do we exclude? but in talking about it with Pete was great. We spark off on ideas off of each other. And we sat down, and I just started writing a bunch of stuff, and Pete was spouting and put it down on big lined pads like somebody I know uses to write his screenplays, except this one was yellow paper. And we started with that. And then it was still a matter of organization, and, we were working with an editor at The Packager, and then they put it up for auction, and Harper Entertainment won the auction, and then there was an editor there involved. And so people had different ideas, and we finally just decided, let's just start writing this and let the book organize itself. It will tell us how to organize it, and that, in fact, is what happened. And, close to the end, there were a couple of chapters that we changed the order around, and there were some chapters that we started out with that it just became obvious they didn't deserve whole chapters by themselves, so we dropped them and made them parts of other chapters. And so it became an organic thing over a period of about a year to put it together. And then Pete went through his collection, I went through my collection, and then we both spent time researching stuff at the Lucasfilm Research Library and the Film Archives and the regular archives and even George's office.
What,
that was fun,
wow.
Wasn't it, Pete?
Did he know you guys were there?
The George thing? No.
Yeah.
It was one of the outer offices, and I was, waited in there for about 5 minutes, and then one of George's assistants brought in this big cardboard box, and inside were all of his handwritten scripts and treatments, and it was like,
wow.
Oh my God moment. So that was great fun.
So,
and then Pete discovered a lot of stuff in the archives and research
clipping archives in terms of history. I rummaged through all those clippings. I mean, files and files just to isolate, what was the deal with this concert that took place in April 78, et cetera, stuff like that. I just needed to isolate some key events to make the story a little more interesting. So that was basically my major role, was just trying to find little nugget historical facts to kind of lace throughout the narrative to make it interesting.
And then Pete came up with an idea and said, has anybody ever seen this particular thing? And I said, well, it must be around someplace. You want to tell that story, Pete?
Sure. We were, I can't remember the chapter. Let's see, it's back here.
It's near the beginning.
It was actually page 8 here. I've got it right in front of me. I wanted to see this reel-to-dialogue-to tape that had been storied and talked about ad nauseum, but never photographed. And so
we wanted to see if it was real or if it was just an anecdote
or fabrication, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Steve made a couple calls, and actually, why don't you pick up the story from there?
Well, you know, this is like one of the first names that George came up with for the movie, and people always ask, well, how do you come up with all those weird names? And he and Walter Murch were mixing the dialogue, Murch actually, and George was there for American Graffiti, and Murch asked, George, would you please get me Real 2 Dialogue 2? But he said, would you please get me R2-D2? And George had a little pad he was keeping names on, and that went on the pad. And, you know, so we've heard this story and this anecdote for years and years, and said, what? He said, I wonder if it really still exists. And so we called over to our film archivist, and he said, well, gee, it's funny you ask about that, because somebody came here about a year ago to borrow it, and we never got it back. Well, to make a long story short, we will name no names, but Lucasfilm got it back. And
that's a heck of a library find, I'm sure.
Huh?
I said, that's got to be a heck of a library find, I'm sure.
Yeah, and we got it back, and one of the guys in the photo archives, Matthew Azevedo, took a whole bunch of pictures, and so it's photographed. This legendary reel with the box was photographed for the first time, and I think that was a eureka moment. I mean, when Pete first suggested it, it's just like bells went off in my mind. I thought, what a great idea. We got to find it. And luckily we did.
I was very pleased that we found that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, now, Steve, I got to ask, you know, as far as getting, you mentioned that you'd worked with the editors, and there were a lot of other people involved in development of the book. But you are the director of content management. So Pete and I were talking before the show. We thought, gosh, who do you have to go to ask whether it's okay to put something into a book or not?
Well, there was one specific piece that our head of communication said, you know, I think you need to check on that before you put it in the book. And that was Carrie Fisher singing the Light Day song from the infamous holiday special. And Lynn Hale said, you know, just to be sure, you really need to get the buy-off of both Carrie and George. And I figured, there wasn't a whole lot of time, and I figured it was a much better idea to go to Carrie first, because if Carrie said yes, then George would more than likely say yes. If Carrie said no, then there wasn't any reason to go to George. So so we sent Carrie's assistant a file, an audio file, and it took a little while because Carrie's very busy and she travels a lot to get her to listen to it. And finally, in desperation, I called and said, I've got like 2 days and I still have to get George's approval. So she played it for Carrie, and the response I don't have a direct quote, but it was something like, whatever. And
a ringing endorsement.
I was able to send a memo to George that said Carrie said fine, and yep, he said okay.
All right.
But well, everything else, I mean, basically, basically nothing was verboten. At the end, the publisher had to get lots of permissions and had to make payments for the cartoons and some of the magazine covers. Some companies let you reproduce it at no cost with credit, and some companies charge you. And so, you know, they did all of that work, and that was sort of the final step.
Well, Steve, since you're the one that brought it up, the holiday special. I know that we get questions here.
What holiday special? Did I say anything about a holiday special?
I heard nothing.
I heard nothing.
You kind of didn't answer my question. We get questions about this from time to time. People have asked what is our official policy on it and what is our stance on it. But more importantly is, really, what is Lucasfilm's, can you say what Lucasfilm's official stance on the subject of the holiday special is?
Well, I don't think there is an official stance. I mean, it's clear that we haven't released this on in any medium. you know, it exists. It's an historical oddity. It's not very good. It's my problem with it is not so much its silliness, but I find it boring. This was an attempt to merge a very popular format at the time that was really starting to die out, which was variety shows, with the Star Wars universe. And it just, you know, people, you know, Harrison Ford and B. Arthur, Art Carney and Mark Hamill, the Jefferson Starship, Diane Carroll, it just made no sense.
You know,
it was...
It never sounded silly to me until you just said that, Steve.
But, you know, silly is one thing. Juvenile is one thing. But its biggest sin to me is that it's boring. And I just can't sit through it.
It does have one redeeming virtue, though.
And everybody can agree. Well, that's the 10-minute Boba Fett animation from Colonel Planet. And that was cool, and, you know, and that's something that we, you know, have made reference to and will continue to. But don't look for a sanctioned release of the holiday special anytime soon.
What about a complete soundtrack? You got one track out there.
A complete soundtrack. Oh, I think once you have the Carrie Fisher song, you have the epitome of the holiday special. And as you saw, you know, there are some pages from the actual script, so you can sing along with Carrie.
Yeah, well,
it's just brilliant.
We did that on the show a couple weeks ago, actually.
It was quite terrible.
when we first got a copy of the book and we were going through it, and I said, "Look at this! It's actually a page from the script."
A peace and harmony. Yeah, well, Carrie sings much better than that.
You'll get that nowhere else, folks.
Absolutely not. You know, Pete, I think it was in Star Wars Insider, I read a really great story about the Howard Chaykin sketches.
Yeah.
And getting those on eBay. Would you mind talking about that a little bit? I thought it was just really interesting how you found those.
Yeah, sure. About a year ago, you know, I'm an eBay junkie, as is Steve, and I'm constantly kind of roaming the zones out there where no one really travels. That's kind of my thing. And somebody had put up these five sketches, and they were advertising them as Joe Johnston's work. And I knew pretty much instantly they were not Johnston's. I could tell by the style that it was something that was not really his thing. But they did look vaguely familiar. They looked like something Chaykin may have done, but there was nothing to suggest that so much on the sketch. There were no signatures. So me and one other bidder went at it, and I actually got the whole lot. I think there were five for about $112, as I recall. And I wasn't sure what I just bought. I thought, hey, these are pretty cool and they look old, but for all I know, they could have been, you know, some fan back in 1978 just kind of scribbling out some sketches. But years later, let's see, about 2 years ago, I was digging through the image archives for an article. I had to come up with some interesting Darth Vader photographs, and I came across a folder that said Chaykin. And so, you know, at this time, I was actually researching some stuff for the poster book, so I thought, eureka, I've hit something that maybe I can use in the poster book at some point. And I pulled the folder out, and in it are seven glossies of these Chaykin sketches, five of which are the ones I had just purchased. I had just purchased the originals, and these were actual photographs of them shot way back in the 70s. So I was extremely pleased by the find, as you can imagine. There's still two at large. The two pictures of Han Solo, there's a close-up head portrait and a full body, and I still hope to locate those sometime, but I was very happy to find the five and the fact that they are definitely Chaykin's. And I actually had written Howard Chaykin to confirm it, and at first he was a little dodgy. He didn't want to fess up because they're a little bit crude, but in the end he said, yeah, you know what, those might be mine.
And Pete is willing to resell them to anyone who's willing to offer him a profit, so I'm going to offer him $113 right now.
I'll have to sit on that one
for
precious. A while.
There are precious pieces, and it's so cool. It's such a cool find.
Yeah.
And it was great to be able to put them in the book, too.
Yeah.
Well, and Pete, that kind of leads me to kind of one of the things that I wanted to get into, which is the Star Wars poster book. And this was actually the first book that I got that kind of got me into this, these large-scale books that kind of bring together the whole Star Wars saga, as we've talked about before, into a certain, you know, kind of a segmented portion of you know, what they bring to the Star Wars universe. And I was a huge fan of this. It was a gift to me, and I went nuts over it when I first got it. And I had so many questions, and I'll keep them kind of short just so we can kind of get to some of the other ones. But my first question is, some of these obscure foreign posters, where did you find those, and how do you know that I'm taking your word for it that it's that they are actually Star Wars? Because I don't read some of these other languages, so I don't know whether it says Star Wars. But some of them are so obscure. What led you to kind of include those and bring those in on what was happening?
I assume you're talking about the Yugoslav, that strange Jedi one with the strange lizard man.
Well, and also the Russian one with
the Russian one with the horse made out of
the Russian one made out of circuit boards.
Yes,
it says, that one.
And the subtitle of that one is Star Wars: A Space Western.
Yes,
and,
that one just blows me away.
There's nothing Star Wars on there. Yeah, it's just great. So, Pete, I'm sorry I interrupted you.
Oh, no problem. Definitely we wanted to include, you know, those really obscure artworks that no one would even assume is a Star Wars poster, but because, you know, through Steve's research and, you know, just basically collectors bringing this stuff up to us, we determined these definitely are Star Wars posters. And, you know, the general public's never seen these. We've got to share these with the public. And so definitely we wanted to include those in the poster book, and was glad to be able to provide those, because now I actually see a lot more attention garnered on these, be it eBay or through collectors, because they're aware that these are actually Star Wars posters and not just some obscure science fiction film made in Russia or whatnot.
So are these kind of like the shaken photos or the sketches where you got your hands on them early and now you've driven up the price by putting out a book about them?
we do that deliberately, guys. That's why I did the Tomar price guide and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, right. You know, we decided on the poster book that naturally we wanted to have all of the US one sheets in there, because those are the ones that people grew up with and are familiar with. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the different art in the major countries where Star Wars was released, that's the way it used to be. There was different art in every major country, like the UK and Japan and some of the Scandinavian countries and France. But as Pete said, we also wanted to show other kinds of posters, both the really way out Eastern European and other posters, and commercial posters, advertising posters, promotional event posters. So there's so many Star Wars posters out there. I mean, most of the posters in the book, if not all, are either in Pete's collection or my collection. And and then, you know, we know of, you know, 2,500, and, you know, we discover more all the time.
Yeah,
and
what's heartbreaking? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was going to say what's heartbreaking is, since that book's been published, you know, of course, Revenge of the Sith has been released, and there's been, you know, hundreds of posters that have come out since, and we've since discovered way more posters that we would have loved to include in that book that just haven't seen the light of day. But you know, someday.
It's also a matter of, you know, it's a design issue and it's a size issue. And the list in the back is about 2,000 posters. And I know one guy came up to us and said, well, gee, how come you didn't publish pictures of all the posters? And I said, well, because they would all be about the size of a postage stamp. this is never meant to be the all-inclusive look at every Star Wars poster. It would be impossible to get someone to publish a book like that. What we wanted to do is a beautiful art book that got people interested in and showed them the history of Star Wars posters, and then there are other ways to pursue, you know, the looks of some of the other ones.
Well, I think that's certainly what you guys accomplished, and I know that Jason and I have talked about on the show a number of times about our collecting has kind of transformed to collecting moments and things that remind us of
yes.
things that we had. And the one that jumped out for me was the Yoda You Can Read poster.
Oh yeah,
I remember seeing that in the school library, and that was the one thing in the school library that I actually cared about when I was there. So you know that was exactly what I was looking for, and that really pulled
that
me.
That was
into
one
the
of
book.
The most popular posters in the history of the American Library Association, and they kept that in print. I think it's still in print, Or they may have done a new Yoda version, but it was in print for 20 years.
Wow.
At least. Maybe still is. Did you say it is,
Beaster? Yeah, I think it is still in print.
I think it is, yeah.
Very cool. You guys, so obviously you've done a number of projects together. You find it easy to collaborate.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
And what can we look forward to?
I've decided that I can't write books by myself anymore. That, number one, there's a huge amount of time that's involved. And number two, I need somebody to play against. I need somebody to collaborate with, because these kinds of books are books where you need to conceptualize and bounce things off and come up with even better ideas than ones that you would come up with on your own. And so it's sort of like making movies. You know, there's one or two people who are the main force behind a movie, but it's really a collaborative effort with a team. And I think that works for these kinds of books too, much better than it works with a separate person.
Steve, how many Star Wars books have you written? I've lost count.
So have I. if you include the two Tomar books as separate books, then this is my 12th.
Well, congratulations.
Since 92. Well, thank you.
What can you tell us about what's coming down the pipeline? Are we going to get a update to the encyclopedia? What's in the works?
Yes. In fact, Pablo Hidalgo and I are working on a revision of the Star Wars Encyclopedia now, although I should be working on it a lot more than I have been able to. that's coming up in the not-too-distant future, and it will be a complete revision of the book. It will certainly include everything that the first book included and everything that's come since and all of the changes, and so it's a massive undertaking. There's another collectibles book that I'm starting to work on with somebody that you guys know, Ann Newman, from Rebel Scum, and Ann has been my collection manager for almost 2 years now. And I don't want to talk about that quite yet in detail, because I'm still waiting for the countersigned contract, and that's probably a book for 2009. But it's going to be a very different kind of collectible book with a lot of. It's not a price guide at all. It's not a complete book, but a very special book and a very anecdotal book.
Now, 2000,
and then there are some other. You know, projects that are a little less certain, but in the future. I always, and I certainly hope to collaborate with Pete again on another book. I always want to have something in the works as far as Star Wars books, and my problem is sometimes I get two or three at the same time, and that's difficult.
Pete, you do a lot of work, obviously, with StarWars.com. What's the future hold for that? By the way, love the blog. I think the blog is fantastic.
Oh, thank
really
you very much.
That.
We've really enjoyed that. I like the fact that you can just, you know, post stuff immediately, and it can be kind of not mainstream. It can be kind of quirky material, stuff like that. So we've really enjoyed that.
Right, it's a great reading.
Future, what in terms of content for StarWars.com?
Yeah, I know that. I mean, back in May, there was sort of a relaunch of the homepage. Of course, there's a huge backlog of a lot of great information that hasn't necessarily been transferred to the new look. I know, the videos, for example, are now sort of encoded in Flash, so they load real quickly. I watched a bunch of the profiles of the Clone Wars guys last weekend and really enjoyed that, how fast it was as opposed to the old QuickTime files. So it seems like the website is really, really catching up, but what can we look forward to still?
Well, you can look forward to more updates, a few more pages deep, for example. Like we've redone the homepage. Well, that's going to start going down to the deeper pages, and it'll keep expanding. So we at some point we'll have a full remodel of the entire site. But we've got that. We've got a lot of other content coming down the pipe that I'm not really in a position to discuss at this point without actually checking with my boss first.
Okay.
So I've got to keep most of that under wraps.
All right. Well, as long as there's stuff coming, I mean, obviously with the exciting projects. And that's I want to close before we – and if you're joining us live on TalkShoe and you want to talk to these gentlemen, please give us a call, 724-444-7444, and that's TalkShoe ID 46670. So give us a call if you're within the sound of our voices. And the last thing I want to close before we get to our listeners' questions, Steve and Pete, to both of you individually, what's the one thing that's coming down the in the future here of Star Wars that you're the most excited for? Whoever wants to go.
Well, sorry, there are two things that I'm very excited about, and they both take place next year. And the first is The Force Unleashed, which in fact, I just saw some scenes that, and actually not cut scenes, but actually play scenes that just have taken my breath away as far as the visuals and what you can do. And also, I have found out some more about the storyline, and so I am even more excited than I have been about The Force Unleashed. And I think that's going to be a major step forward for Star Wars fans and a whole new way of looking at Star Wars and interactive games, and that's very exciting. And obviously, we're very much looking forward to the launch of Star Wars The Clone Wars, the animated series, likely in the fall of 2008. And again, you know, we have seen Pete's been doing a lot of reporting on that up at Big Rock Ranch, where animation is, and he has seen a lot in the development and met a lot of the people that he's written about. The series itself, we've seen about five or six of the episodes, and they just get better and more exciting. I can't wait till that airs, and we can share that with everybody.
Yeah, neither can we.
And I too, I am extremely excited about Clone Wars, and that is not just a marketing line. I'm a hardcore fan, and I am absolutely positive the fans are going to love this series. I've seen five or six episodes now, and with every episode I see, I become more and more certain that this is going to be something really, really enthusiastically embraced by fandom. And I couldn't be more happy with Dave Filoni and Catherine Winder's direction for this series. It's just fantastic. I really cannot wait for this series to come out.
Well, we've been big cheerleaders here on the program for Dave Filoni. We were so impressed by him at Celebration 4. His love of Star Wars is infectious, and it really is exciting to see a project.
And
like
he's also got a cool Kit Fisto costume.
Well,
yes, he does.
And a story, right? All right. Well, guys, we have some callers on the line, so we're going to go ahead and take those. And I do want to say to our callers, please try to get right to your questions so we can get as many of these through as possible, okay? So you are on with the Force Cast with Pete and Steve. Go ahead with your question.
Hi, guys. My question is for Steve and Pete. If there was enough interest and material in about, I don't know, maybe 5 or 10 years, or maybe longer, would you make another vault showcasing Star Wars from the 30th anniversary onward?
Was that addressed to me or to Steve?
Either one wants to take that.
Why doesn't Steve feel that one?
Sure. I mean, it's sort of like, 10 years after the scrapbook, the vault came out. If there's enough interest in a project, I think we would absolutely be happy to tackle it. There are so many things that we couldn't put into this book, and there will be 10 more years of memories. So, I think that's a very real possibility.
Very cool. Hey, thanks for your question. All right, you are on with the Force Cast with Steve Sansweet and Pete Vilmer. Go ahead. Hello. Hi there.
Yeah. exactly who are they? I don't know. I'm a little confused.
Okay, we're going to take the next caller. Okay, you are on with the Force Cast with Steve Sansweet and Pete Vilmer. That's who they are.
Too many deaths there.
Hi.
Oh, is that who I'm calling about? This is Jedi Schwa.
Jedi Schwa, welcome to the show.
Oh, I heard somebody say there was a Pete on, and I guess a Steve. I was calling for Pete and Jason, but I'll talk to any Pete.
Too many Petes. Pete and Remy. I don't know.
All right, Jedi Schwab, what do you got to say?
Well, I was just wondering, you know, for both Pete and Steve, you know, a lot of people listening, and you guys have all been collecting for a really long time, you know, and I know for, you know, me personally, I collect all kinds of stuff just for the memories of being a kid back in the 70s and having such a great childhood and enjoying the movies so much. But, you know, you guys have more than I can ever dream to have, of course, but why do you guys still do it? I mean, does it still excite you? What do you still collect for? Or is it just habit?
It's a great question.
I collect track that
yeah,
first.
Sure. I mean, I you know, simply love this saga. I love the franchise, and I love gathering. I have more of a historical slant to my collecting. I like gathering pieces from specific moments in the saga's history, be it, you know, an event like a concert or tickets to a special screening, stuff like that. I just like to gather all these things to kind of recreate the experience of growing up with Star Wars. So that is why I collect these things. And, you know, I just really like looking at Star Wars items. I think they've got a great aesthetic, and I like being reminded of the fun, the adventure, and the myth of it all.
Well, all that goes for me, too. But unfortunately, I have this disease called completism. Now, you have to realize that if you're sane, you understand that you cannot possibly have everything. And eBay has certainly brought that lesson home to me every day. I see things on eBay I never knew existed, both old and current. You know, some people assume that my job or maybe Pete's job consists of, you know, playing with toys all day, but it's not. That's a personal time thing. Neither of us are involved in, you know, licensing or collectible type activities during the day. I just love to see it all, and I do tours of my museum for charities. I've had Make-A-Wish kids over, or just, you know, fellow fans, and the most fun I have is walking through it with people, some of whom aren't even, you know, Star Wars collectors and barely qualify as, you know, Star Wars fans, but they. You can't help but appreciate something when you see it all together and you see it displayed in a way that just sort of captivates you and brings back, you know, either keeps you a kid if you are a kid or brings back the kid that hopefully is still alive in all of us and sometimes is struggling to get out.
Awesome. Jedi Schwa, thanks. Yeah.
Yes, and thank you for coming on the show. And I just got to say, I did get Pick Up the Vault. My wife got it for me for my birthday, and it's amazing. I think more than anything I've got in a long time, it has brought back a lot of that nostalgia for me. So great job, guys, and hey, thanks for coming on and answering our questions.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank
we
you.
Appreciate that. You know, it's also great for exercise. You know, it's if you get one of them in each hand and, you know, you do your sort of weight training, 6 pounds, fairly good.
Yeah. I was going to say, we got the tail of the
yeah.
tape here. The tail of the tape is 128 pages and 6 pounds. That's quite a book.
Yeah.
We got
yeah.
a couple more.
Yeah, I'm going to start with one book in two hands, I think, but I'll work up to the two books.
All right, Schwa, thank you, buddy. Appreciate it. All right. You are on with the Forcecast with Jason, Pete and Steve, hello.
Hello.
Yes. Go ahead with your question.
Hi, how are you?
Doing great.
I'm going to try and make this quick. My name is East Coast Brooks. I'm calling from Halifax, Nova Scotia.
Oh, my. Well, welcome.
And, well, thank you. You guys have a great podcast going on. Pete, Steve, it's a pleasure to hear you online. I hope I get to meet you someday. But, my question is for Mr. Sansweet. When Return of the Jedi came out, there was a big controversy about the 1138 reference in the movie. Now, for the last, decade anyway that I can remember, when they released the special edition, you know, everybody was talking about it. It was one of those things that, you know, the real Star Wars fans knew about. And if you weren't in, it was kind of like an inside joke that you know, the outsiders weren't allowed to know about. But what I want to know is recently I was online, and there was the 12-inch Real Action Hero Bush figurine. And on the side of her helmet, on the right-hand side, it has 1138. Is that the reference that George Lucas put in the movie?
That's a good question.
That's an excellent question, and you stumped me. because, yeah, we've been told, and we've really looked into it, you know, that there was an 1138 reference and have not been able to really discover one way or another. I doubt that they would. I doubt that the company that makes the RAH dolls would have done that or been allowed to do that if that really wasn't true.
Exactly.
So now Pete's going to go over to the archives and look at that. Exactly. So that's a wonderful question, and I don't know the final answer.
Actually, I've got a carpool buddy who works in licensing, so I'm going to ask him that on the way home tonight.
He
would have been the one who approved that one.
Well, I wonder if...
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was wondering if there are, like, turnaround shots of the Bush helmet in the original Star Wars Chronicles book, and I just don't recall. I know there's pictures of it,
so.
But...
Well, if I may, the figure was done by Sideshow Collectibles, mm-hmm. and
it was released by Sideshow. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. But they're known to use actual pictures, props, and references from the movies. So, like you said, they wouldn't do it lightly.
I doubt it tremendously,
that's why I'm thinking that it's more than just rumor or, you know, hey, let's slap it there and see what the world says. But for me, I was very surprised that there wasn't much more of a reaction from the rest of the Star Wars community.
Like, well, maybe there will be now.
Well, I'll tell you what I can do. I will investigate this, and then I will contact Jason and Pete and let them know what I find out, and then they can share that on the next podcast.
And maybe blog it, too.
Or blog it.
Perfect.
Yeah. There you go.
All right. Very cool.
Okay, well, guys, I'm going to ring off and let other people call in.
All right.
Thanks a lot.
Nice chatting with you all. I'm sorry to have given you a real challenge.
No, that's fun. That's
but,
always.
You know, that's one of the things that's kept me a fan of the movies for so long, because Jedi was the first movie I saw in 1983.
Right.
And, you know, I'm almost 30 now, and much to the chagrin of my darling wife, I can't see me getting bored of the movies anytime soon. So,
Star Wars widow. All right,
Hey,
thanks a lot. Appreciate it. We got another caller here. You are on with Steve and Pete. Please, no more hard questions. Hello, you're on the line.
Steve, is there any subset of fans internationally or otherwise that have especially intrigued you or have an interesting style of fandom?
Is there any subset of fans who have a... You know, actually, the fans in Mexico just love to show their passion and also their skills by making things. And at a lot of the conventions, there are contests, and the contests have like multiple categories, like best custom figure, best diorama, best pinata, and I, you know, of all categories these days, I think I really love fan-made things the best or among the best, because they really do show the passion of Star Wars fans into, you know, spending the kind of time and making the effort that it takes to create something, whether it's a costume or a vehicle made out of tongue depressors, or taking flat tin plate and making a 2-foot in diameter Millennium Falcon, or in the case of one thing that I prize highly, a bantha pinata. You lift its saddle and put in the candy and the toys and everything, although I'd be damned if I'd let anybody get close to it with a bat. So, I see fans everywhere that do things like that. But it's the fans in Mexico who seem to do it the most and share their passion for Star Wars that way.
Well, that's really interesting. I never know. That was a great question. Thank you very much. That's interesting to know that the different nationalities, you know, different countries have different ways of sharing their fandom. That's very
yeah.
Cool.
I mean, there are a lot of similarities, but people do react differently. I'm reminded of the famous anecdote when, Star Wars opened in Japan a year after it opened in the U.S., and Alan Ladd Jr., who was the guy who gave the green light for Star Wars and was head of movie production at 20th Century Fox, went over there, and, you know, he sat in on the premiere, and the movie ended, and there was, like, deathly silence. Nobody clapped, nobody said anything, and nobody moved. And he tells the story, I thought I was going to have to go out of the theater and call George and say, George, we've got a big failure on our hands in Japan. And you know, one of his Japanese companions could see his face and his expression. He said, no, you don't understand. This is the highest form of flattery in a Japanese movie theater. They are just so awed by the movie that they're just sitting here and not saying a word. Wow. Otherwise, they'd be scrambling out of there, I guess. So it was a huge success in Japan, as we now know.
Right.
Wow. Everybody, you know, it has to do with culture, individual countries' culture.
Right. Excellent. We got another caller here on the line. You are on the Forcecast with Jason, Pete, Steve Sansweet, and Pete Vilmer. Go ahead with your question.
Hello, this is Kay, Mrs. Polishkawa.
Hi there.
Hey.
I gotta say, I want to interrupt and introduce the Jawas here real quick. Is Steve and Pete? What the Jawas do for us every week is they'll take something funny that Pete and I might happen to say on the program, and they do a little animation and they put it up on YouTube. So it's kind of
oh cool.
It's a podcast of a podcast in a way. So it's very cool. So we love the Jawas. They're really creative. So I just had to give you that little plug. Go ahead with your question.
Thank you. Yes. Hello. My question is for Steve. And I wanted to know, do you actually go to stores anymore to supplement your collection, or do you just special order everything?
No, I have to buy everything I get, so I either buy it online.
Do you like go and stroll the aisles, or do you do special?
Oh, sure. I mean, I just on the way home last night, I stopped at Target and Costco. Number one, to see if Costco had any special items, and they have a 4-pack of Star Wars Lego pens, and Target is no, and I also stopped at Kmart too because they I saw on Rebel Scum, or I think it was on Rebel Scum, that there are these 4-packs of mugs and Star Wars cocoa, and my store doesn't have, you know, anything, but and then different Targets have different ornaments. So yeah, I'm always, you know, whenever I have time, I'm out there trolling.
It brings up a funny image of being in the store and being next to Steve Sansweet. Like,
well, like I gotta tell you,
the whole "Do you know who I am?"
scenario. During episode one, when I was still not episode one. It was a special edition. I was still living in L.A. and people were just starting to. It was, you know, pre-blog, but people were posting things and forums and stuff. And you know, I went. There was a whole new, you know, it was one day and a whole bunch of stuff came out, and I was at Toys R Us first thing in the morning, and somebody, you know, rode into somewhere saying, "Oh, I saw Steve Sansweet buying Star Wars stuff today." Gee, he has a bigger nose than I thought. What?
Oh, nice.
So, I mean, that was, that's really nice of him.
I've been in a store with Steve a few times, and, you know, if there's like a display dump full of, trading cards or keychains, instead of buying just, you know, each keychain, he'll say, "I need this display." So to get the display, he has to buy every single keychain or trading card in the display to get the display. So that's that's how committed Steve is to being a completist.
I should be committed, you mean.
You should be committed, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, Mrs. Jawa, thanks so much for calling. We appreciate it. We got a couple more we'll take
Thank
here.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot. You
Bye.
Are you are on with the on the Forcecast with Jason Pete. Pete and Steve.
Hi.
Hi there.
Hi, it's Kramer. It's Kramer.
Hey, Kramer.
Happy birthday, Kramer.
Thanks. Yeah, I got the Vol for my birthday. I totally loved it. I read every word in like two nights. I was telling a friend about it, and you used the word scrapbook, but I think of it more as like a petting zoo of Star Wars history.
Yeah, it is not really a scrapbook. It's much more. I mean, that's why we sort of toss the word vault back and forth, but that really fits it much better than scrapbook.
I've heard it called scrapbook on steroids.
A petting zoo.
Yeah, exactly.
These are things like I've seen before, but behind glass or on TV or in other books. So it was cool to take it out and hold it for myself, you know.
Great.
My question is, did you have to do any convincing with Lucasfilm about putting out a book of this scale with the price and the stuff, the goodies inside, or were they cool about it?
Now, all of our books are done through Lucasfilm, and so this has the Lucas Books logo on there, and so any Star Wars books, just about any authorized Star Wars books, and certainly by employees, go through Lucas Books, which is the publishing division of Lucas Licensing. So we're always working with them both on the initial concept. In this case, it was very cool because I actually got to choose the publishing company to work with. It was down to about two choices, and we had never worked with these guys up in Seattle, but something just felt right, and it worked out that way. And they're now doing more Star Wars books because they're happy with the way it turned out. We're happy with the way it turned out. You have to get all, you know, in order to be a completist, there are versions in six languages. So all of you completists out there, just, no, I don't even have them all yet.
All right, we've got time for just a couple more questions. You are on the Forcecast with Steve Sansweet and Pete Vilmer, authors of the Star Wars Vault. Go ahead. Hello.
Steve, what did your colleagues at the Wall Street Journal make of your shifting career and of your Star Wars fandom in general? I've always wondered about that.
Well, that went through a transition. It was very clear that I was passionate about Star Wars. And one day my secretary did come into the office and say, you know, Steve, you should know that there are some people here who think you're more passionate about Star Wars than journalism, which was towards the end of my stay, my 26-year stay at the Wall Street Journal. And I realized that was true, which is why I made the transition. I started writing Star Wars books. My first one came out in 92, and that was fine. They sort of looked at me a little odd. But the biggest problem I had was from the headquarters when I started doing the QVC Shopping Channel shows. I was co-host on 26 two-hour shows over a 4 or 5 year period. And the first show, they introduced me as, you know, being the bureau chief of the Wall Street Journal, and that ruffled some feathers back at headquarters. And so they said, well, you shouldn't be doing those shows. And I said, well, you know, it's really, I look at it as no different than, you know, some of your guys who are doing Washington Week in Review. I don't see why I can't talk about Star Wars. And they say, well, as long as you're not identified with the journal, we're not crazy about it. But, and so I kept doing that. And people in the office, when I told them that I was leaving and going to Lucasfilm, were all very happy for me because they knew how much I truly love Star Wars. And this seemed like the ideal job, and it still is 11 years later.
All right. We do have just a couple of emails, and there was one in particular I wanted to get to. Let's see. This one first comes from Jared. Let's see. Hey, guys, great show. I can't listen, but I wonder if you could pass along a question to Steve. What is your favorite piece of music-related Star Wars memorabilia? Is it an old LP, something much more obscure? I'd love to know. Thanks, guys. Jared from Florida.
Gee, music related.
Yeah.
Well, I wasn't asked a question, but I'll throw in mine. Please do, Pete. I have Mika's Star Wars and Other Galactic Funk. I have one of their Platinum Record Awards. That's definitely my favorite music-related piece.
Really?
Love that album. Love it that it's on Platinum.
I think my favorite movie music-related piece is an actual CD made from an album that most people seem to hate and that I just love, and in fact wrote the liner notes for the CD, and that's the Star Wars Christmas album. I mean, what do you get a Wookiee for Christmas when he already has a... How could you beat lyrics like that? And R2-D2, We Wish You a Merry Christmas. I mean, the very first recording of John Bon Jovi,
right,
because his cousin was, you know, owned the recording studio, and lyrics that were written by a music professor who also wrote the lyrics to the Broadway show 9. I mean, this is classic Star Wars, guys, although Anthony Daniels has some very unpleasant memories of the whole situation. I love that album. I love it.
Yeah, I was kind of glad to see that it got re-released. It's part of my... I collect Christmas albums, and the worse they are, the better. And I mean, Kathy Lee Gifford's Christmas album is just wonderfully bad.
You don't put
bad.
It in that category, do you?
Well, not quite, but I just love bad.
No, I really do enjoy it. There's a certain naivete to it, and I had argued for a long time with Lucasfilm. I had argued that, you know, you really need to re-release this on CD, and they always kept looking at me like I was the crazed collector that I am. And finally, Rhino came to Lucasfilm, and I remember getting a call from the head of publishing saying, "Oh, you'll be really happy to know that for some reason Rhino is interested in re-releasing this, and they'd like you to write the liner notes." So I said, "I'm delighted."
Well, this comes from Tony G in New York City, and he said, first off, I want to thank Steve and Pete for putting together an amazing book. I've been a Star Wars fan since the beginning, and this book brought back a ton of memories. I was lucky enough to get it. This is what I thought was really interesting. I was lucky enough to get it as a birthday present a couple weeks ago and just ordered one as a gift for my nephew, who bought it for me. Interesting. I just thought how neat that was, that an uncle and a nephew, you know,
that's
from
great.
Different generations,
that is awesome.
Share this book together. It was very cool.
Well, it's also a great Christmas gift, I think, great holiday gift, and you know, the timing couldn't be better, and we're both really pleased that it came out around this time.
And I don't know, Steve, if you or Pete thought about this when you were putting it together, but Tony G said, he says, interesting that you should mention the fans should interact with the book, as one of the things I did was find some of the original items that I had of my own that were either referenced or pictured in the book. For example, the original program, some THX flyers, fan club newsletters. And he says, and I put my own collectibles into the book.
How cool.
So I don't
very
know.
Very cool. Yeah, that's the first I've heard of that. He's really making it into a vault. That's very cool.
Right,
absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
So again, that was from Tony G. We appreciate that. He did have a question. He says, lastly, I just wanted to ask, I noticed a few things were left out. For example, no Blue Harvest stuff, fairly limited C4 coverage. Not-
au contraire.
No, there is a Blue Harvest piece.
Au contraire. There's Blue Harvest stuff. And there's the whole chapter on Revenge of the Jedi, and there's a picture of a Blue Harvest raincoat that was used by a crew up in Northern California.
Well, see, Tony G.
Now, we mention it.
All right, so... Tony,
and what else does he think was left out?
Let's see.
Well, C4, but that's obvious because they're
C4.
You had
is
to get
in there. There's a
it is in there, which
patch,
is amazing.
There's a yeah, C4 is in there.
Yeah, that's right. And
geez,
a Star Wars weekend.
Hey, tell Tony G to read the book again.
All right, well, Tony, we appreciate the email.
The Rose Parade in there, C4 is in there. Yeah, now, we try to, you know, include the 30th anniversary in there, and the very last chapter does.
And a good friend of ours from across the pond, Paul, and his beautiful wife, Athena, he said a couple little questions. Well, first he wanted to just to say that he and his wife were lucky enough to accompany Ralph McQuarrie on Ralph's first visit to Rancho Obi-Wan. He said, we had a fantastic time. I don't think we let Steve know just how much we appreciated him letting us join in on the fun. His collection is incredible, and we can't think of a nicer guy to be looking after it. So,
well, that's really sweet. They're great folks, and we met them at Celebration Europe, and they're a hoot.
They are great. He had a question for you. He says, if I remember correctly, your collecting began with a horde of vintage tin robots. My question is, do you keep abreast of the EU? And assuming you do, do you have a favorite droid outside of the movies?
Boy. It did start with robots. I still have them all. And do I have a favorite droid outside the movies? Oh, my. None comes to mind immediately.
How about Fritz Lang's Maria?
Huh?
Fritz Lang's Maria.
Well, no, he meant in the Star Wars Universe.
I gotcha.
Maybe R2KT might come to.
Well, that's true. I didn't consider R2KT in the expanded universe, but certainly there is a lot of feeling and emotion tied to that little pink droid. So,
there sure is.
That's a good one.
I wanted to tell you, Steve. My wife and I are hooked on Home and Garden TV. And HGTV, and there was a program the other night about this little boy that had this rare muscular disease, and he was getting a new bedroom, and what he wanted more than anything was a Star Wars-themed bedroom. So they came in, and they did this, created this room for this little guy, and they got a ton of stuff from the good folks at Lucasfilm for this little boy. And I just want to say, as a viewer, when I see stuff like that, it makes me so proud to be a Star Wars fan. I know that sounds corny, but it really does, and I just think it's great what you guys do for the kids.
Well, it's not only us, though. It's really, I mean, we're also inspired by the fans. I mean, look at organizations like the 501st and the Rebel Legion. They've become service organizations. They do charity events. They visit kids' hospital wards and make kids happy, raise money, do Toys for Tots. It's just amazing what our fans do to give back to their communities, which is one of the reasons I dedicated the book to the 501st.
All right. Well, and it's an amazing book. And, Steve, as you said, it's great. It's fortuitous that it's out here at Christmas time. If I didn't already have one, it would definitely be on my Christmas list.
Well, wait a second.
What?
Well, if you only have one, how can you iron on the transfer, play with the Letra sets, and still have a mint book?
That's a good point. That's a real good point. And you know what, though, Steve? I got to tell you, I'm over my two of everything disease that I had. So that was kind of a part of the marriage contract before my wife and I got
together.
Yeah,
I'm sure it was.
Anyway, Steve Sansweet and Pete Vilmer, we just can't thank you guys enough. What a thrill. What a pleasure to have you guys on the program. And it's just a real honor. So thank you for making the time for us.
It was a lot of fun.
Our pleasure. Thanks so much for calling.
All right. Hey, thanks a lot, guys. We're going to wrap the show up here in just a second. Wow, that was probably the fastest hour in the history of the Forcecast. Well,
that was great. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Once again, we want to thank Steve Sansweet and Pete Vilmer, authors of the Star Wars Vault and many other books and projects Star Wars related. We all, as fans, owe them a great debt, so thanks to them. Thank you for joining us live, those of you who suffered through some of our technical difficulties on TalkShoe. We are here just about each and every week on TalkShoe at Wednesday nights at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And, of course, you can get the podcast on iTunes or through theforce.net, rebelscum.com. If you'd like to send us an email, you can do so. Pete, tell them how.
You can send us an email at podcast@theforce.net. And, again, we always do read them. We may not get back to you right away. We may get back to you in 6 months, but we will get back to you. And we're always happy to get all those great tales that you guys send us. So thank you very much. And you can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 330-871-4TFN.
I do encourage you, if you heard a lot of the voices tonight of some of our Forcecasters, as we call them, and they have a community over at rebelscum.com on the forums. Great group of folks. Sometimes on some of these forums, you never know what you're going to get. But over there at the official Forcecast forums, couldn't ask for a nicer group of people, so make sure you check that out. We're going to take a break next week for the Thanksgiving holiday. So this was kind of like, this was your big turkey. And we mean that in a good way. So once again, thanks to Steve. Thanks to Pete. Thanks to all of you for listening. For the Forcecast, I'm Jason.
And I'm Pete.
And remember,
the Force will be with you always.
This podcast is not endorsed by Lucasfilm Limited or 20th Century Fox and is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The official Star Wars site can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names and sounds of Star Wars characters, vehicles, and any other Star Wars related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Lucasfilm Limited or their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of TheForce.net LLC unless otherwise indicated.